And that was Bob Dylan. Masters of War seemed appropriate since America is having Memorial Day. They want to think about war. That seems to be appropriate. I think we're joined by Stephen Gowans. Are you there, sir?
I am. Hello, Phil.
Well, Stephen, thanks very much for being our guest. By the way, we were just speaking to Eva Bartlett, and who is has written a lot about Syria, and in making her point, she cited, of all people, Stephen Gowans. So I think we got the right guy. Stephen, you've written a new post at gowans.wordpress.com, what's left, and this one has to do with an intriguing subject. The North Korea challenges legal basis for latest UN sanctions resolution, and it's interesting, I guess. It's when we listen to President Obama of the United States, he's very big on international law and everybody obeying it and such. But North Korea says there's something wrong with the American argument. Well, in the UN Security Council, so they've decided. What is it? They're asking them to account for this, to show them in law that they, North Korea, violated something?
Yeah. They're calling the UN Security Council to justify its decisions. So, you know, it's background. So on March 2nd, the UN Security Council imposed sanctions on North Korea. And it cited North Korea's nuclear test earlier in the year of January 6th, and also its satellite launch on February 7th. And it said, oh, the launch relied on ballistic missile technology, which could be used as a nuclear weapons delivery system. And the Security Council didn't want North Korea to do that. So this is UN Security Council Resolution 2270. It was approved, by the way, unanimously by all 15 Security Council members, including Venezuela and Angola. But, you know, the North Koreans say there's nothing in international law that says a country cannot have nuclear weapons. I mean, true, there exists the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, but it's only binding on parties to it, not on those who decline to join it, like Israel, and not binding on those who have withdrawn from it, as North Korea has done.
Yes, by the way, after long engagement with the process and finding it to be a fairly hypocritical exercise, right?
Yeah, and they withdrew on the grounds that despite the fact that they were members of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, that the United States continued to threaten them with nuclear attack. So they said, well, we're going to withdraw and we're going to develop our own nuclear weapons as a means of deterring the United States from threatening us. Of course, the United States continues to threaten North Korea, but there's the hope that this will deter the United States from attacking. There's nothing in international law either that says a country cannot have ballistic missiles, and there's nothing in international law that says a country cannot launch a satellite. So on what grounds, you know, the Security Council imposed sanctions on North Korea? And it turns out there are grounds, and the grounds are Article 39 of the UN Charter, which gives the Security Council the authority to determine the existence of any threat to peace and then to take appropriate measures to eclipse that threat. So the Security Council, in its resolution, defined the proliferation of nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons, as well as their means of delivery, threats to international peace and security. And they then determined that North Korea's nuclear test posed a danger to peace and stability in the region and beyond. And it was on that basis that they justified the imposition of sanctions on North Korea. But North Korea is objective in for the following reasons, and I think they're compelling reasons. The first thing North Korea says is that the Security Council's definition of what constitutes a threat to international peace and security, you know, within the context of this resolution, makes no reference to violations of international law. So it doesn't say that North Korea has done anything wrong according to international law. It simply says we've determined that North Korea's activities are a threat to international peace and security. The second thing that the North Koreans point out is that the resolution uniquely defines North Korea's nuclear test and satellite launch as threats to peace, but does not define the nuclear tests or satellite launches of its permanent members as threats to peace and international security. So they say, if the United States can test nuclear weapons, and the United States or China or France or Britain or Russia can launch satellites and have ballistic missiles, why is it that North Korea can't? Or why is it that when North Korea engages in these activities, it's a threat to peace and international security, but not when the five permanent members of the UN Security Council engage in these activities? So, you know, the question is, why is launching a satellite a threat when North Korea does it, but not when the United States does it? And you could say, well, because when North Korea does it, it constitutes the development of a nuclear weapons delivery system, which is what's implied in the Security Council resolution. But the reply to that is, so why is a nuclear weapons delivery system in the hands of North Korea a threat, but not in the hands of the permanent members of the Security Council? And in my view, I mean, there can only be two reasons for this. I mean, the first reason is what an anthropologist named Hugh Gusterson called nuclear orientalism. So this is the idea that we can live with nuclear weapons in the hands of the five permanent members of the Security Council in Israel, but proliferation to third world countries is enormously dangerous. And I know the term orientalism can be confusing, so you could use another term. Just say us versus them thinking, and that's really what Gusterson meant. So saying, you know, we think in terms of us versus them, and them is always the polar opposite of us. So we're rational, we're dispassionate, we're responsible, we're adults, so we can be trusted with nuclear weapons and chemical weapons and biological weapons and ballistic missiles. But they are irrational, whoever we decide they is. You know, in this case, the North Koreans or the Syrians, whoever, you know, the enemy du jour is. So they're irrational. They're inclined to be carried away by passion. They're irresponsible. They're children, so they can't be trusted with dangerous weapons.
It sounds like, MEC, it sounds like we call that profiling, I think. There's some kind of profiling we do in Toronto after certain kinds of people get to be stopped. And ask things, and others don't get stopped, but it is necessary to keep the civilized order. Somehow, it seems to be the notion, the underlying notion.
But also this idea that we're adults and they're children can be seen sometimes when the United States in particular talks about not indulging or encouraging the bad behavior of other countries. You know, North Korea's bad behavior can't be encouraged. So we can't talk peace with North Korea because it would encourage the bad behavior. So they're children and they're adults.
Yeah, and by the way, it's kind of a 19th century idea about how families, keeping family order, involving spanking or correcting, putting people in rooms, et cetera. On this thing about civilization, I'm remembering as you're talking this, but of course Hollywood did a movie about, what was it, a year ago, where they actually had the leader of North Korea explode with two comedians get in a helicopter with him and his head blows up. I think that's how it goes. And that was the civilized West discussing an actual leader of a country.
And the leader was described in orientalist ways. I mean, so our leaders are rational and dispassionate, but their leader is crazy, irrational. And that's also a part of, you know, this orientalist discourse, or us versus them discourse that you see in the mass media, in depicting the leader of North Korea as always, he's irrational and crazy, and you never know what he's going to do.
Well, now, and apropos of this, I just today saw a story about this crisis after reading your article. I was looking, and they said that North Korea has offered to South Korea that they have talks And this is part of the backdrop to the discussion about are they going to test a weapon. But they made a direct proposal, and it's not the first one, for direct talks so as to ease the tensions that come every year with the annual war festival that South Korea and the United States stages, always with threats that get pretty ugly. But the South Koreans rejected the idea of talking out of hand. They said, oh, no, we're not going to do that.
Yeah, then that's what the South Koreans do. That's what the United States does. There's absolutely no evidence that the United States or South Korea want to reduce tensions because they never do. North Korea has repeatedly sued, requested peace for talks, ways of reducing tension, and invariably those requests are dismissed. Well, almost invariably.
Mm-hmm.
But you could argue that the reason why is because this constant tension and cranking up of tension and threat against North Korea is part of the U.S. strategy. And some people say it's part of the U.S. strategy of eventually bringing about the collapse of the North Korean government.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly when he introduced this policy some years back, we went through a period where we were being told that they were going to collapse any day. I mean, it was like it was going to be over. As I recall, during the Clinton administration, it was all just a question of how are we going to bandage together the remains. And so they were at one point very cocky about how they were going to pull this off.
Yeah, and part of the strategy was to force the North Koreans to divert a lot of their resources, their scarce resources, because it's a small country, into its military. And it had a military-first policy.
Mm-hmm.
The reason it had a military-first policy is because it was under incessant threat. So the idea was you could simply undermine the civilian economy and the whole place is going to collapse,
mm-hmm.
which hasn't happened. But interestingly, there are two interesting points about that. Number one, the North Koreans are following a new policy, and the new policy says, you know, if we have nuclear weapons, they're a pretty effective deterrent. I think they're more effective than conventional weapons. And mm-hmm. that means that we can reduce the amount of our resources that we divert to the military into our civilian economy,
mm-hmm.
Which is an argument that Western countries have often made about having nuclear weapons, which is you get bigger bang for the buck, more deterrent.
Mm-hmm.
Than we'd have if we had to invest in conventional weapons. So it makes economic sense for us to do so. So the North Koreans are pursuing that line of argument as well. Also, going back to the idea of Orientalism, so Gustafson had argued that one aspect of nuclear Orientalism was to say, you know, third world countries can't have nuclear weapons because it's just so expensive. And they ought to be investing mm-hmm. their scarce resources into the needs of their people.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll find that argument in the UN Security Council resolution. So the UN, the Security Council has expressed great concern that Pyongyang is diverting resources to the pursuit of nuclear weapons and ballistic missiles when DPRK citizens have great unmet needs. Well, first of all, this doesn't mention the fact that perhaps one of the reasons they have great unmet needs is because they forced the North Koreans into a situation where they have to be on a permanent war footing. But also, Gustafson had pointed out that this argument can be applied just as strongly to Western countries. So, for example, the United States spends hundreds of billions of dollars on its military, far in excess of what's required for national defense. Well, 2 million Americans live without shelter, and 36 million live below the official poverty line. So why isn't the Security Council expressing great concern that Washington's diverting resources to the pursuit of nuclear weapons and ballistic missiles? You know, well, U.S. citizens have great unmet needs.
Well, indeed. I want to ask you about that. John Pilger, in a recent article, has a johnpilger.com, by the way, to look at that. He points out that under Obama, who won the Nobel Prize, the U.S. has expanded its nuclear weapons outlay and in the trillions and introduced all sorts of new murderous devices, and nobody says you can't do it. I mean, but because, as you say, there's this magic line, I guess, between the colonized or the formerly colonized and the Western powers.
Yeah, and there are all kinds of programs that the United States is pursuing to provide or develop weapons that are non-nuclear but have the same destructive capability as nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And even to develop some nuclear weapons, which they call thinkable weapons, which have a lower yield, or they call them dial a yield. So, you know, we can dial the yield up or down depending on our requirements.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can make them a little less destructive, and maybe that makes them more thinkable.
Yes. That's the other additional, is the citations I've seen from the Pentagon element is that you know, that it becomes usable. And I recall that actually when they were going to go after Iraq, there was talk, should we use one of these things, you know, one of these micro-atom weapons. This is a kind of a dangerous area where you have, as you know, kind of a bunch of toys that haven't been played with. You know, these generals, each of them has under his command some of these things, they would like to put them to use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have Hiroshima and Nagasaki as an example. I mean, there was a Japanese philosopher who said they only used two of them because they only had two.
Mm-hmm.
They would have, if there'd been more, they would have used them.
Yeah, and you're also referring to an issue that Gusterson and others have brought up, which is that, you know, the UN Security Council will express its concern over what you might call horizontal proliferation, so more countries getting weapons, but not over vertical proliferation, meaning the countries that have the weapons developing more weapons and greater means of weapons of that are equally as destructive.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, in regards to the Chinese, I mean, one of the weapons that the United States has now developed or developing relies on kind of kinetic energy. So it would be a missile that flies at supersonic speeds. And when it re-enters the atmosphere, it's traveling at such a high rate of speed that there'd be no explosion involved. It was just that traveling so rapidly that it would be able to create massive destruction on impact. And in response to that, the Chinese are now talking about their own vertical proliferation.
Mm-hmm.
We need more nuclear weapons, and we need more ways of delivering nuclear weapons in order to meet this threat from the United States.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking to Stephen Gowans, gowans.wordpress.com, and the title of the article is North Korea Challenges Legal Basis for Latest UN Sanctions Resolution. And Stephen, I mentioned it, and of course, that the North Koreans have said, or the government of North Korea says, that they would be willing at any time to talk to the South Korean military about matters. And as your article's previous writing on this has pointed out, they're almost being overkind or overly respectful, because actually South Korean army is very much under the U.S. thumb. And the U.S. has almost 40,000 troops in South Korea. This is occupying South Korea. It never went home after World War II. Again, most media are helping maintain the myth about what kind of government this is in South Korea. I wonder if you could talk about that a bit, and also the tie-in with they're making an additional one that the U.S. wants Japan to become more active and to build more weaponry because of North Korea. They're using it as an excuse for Japan to break its international commitments not to build up an army.
Yeah, there's an analyst, a very astute one of North Korea, who argues that North Korea is all about China. And yes, North Korea is often used as a pretext for positioning troops on the Korean Peninsula, which are really Are they intended to protect the South Koreans from an invasion from North Korea? Or are they there as a way of containing the Chinese or threatening the Chinese? And is the attempt to build this kind of alliance between South Korea and Japan and the United States and Australia as well a way of, you know, enforcing the Obama doctrine of the pivot to the Asia Pacific, which is deploying forces to threaten China?
Mm-hmm.
But with regard to South Korea and what kind of country or government it has, or regime, if you wanted to call it that, it does have a very authoritarian regime, and one that imposes a number of restrictions on civil and political liberties. Certainly is a highly anti-communist regime, and one that is vehemently opposed to the North Koreans and imposes innumerable restrictions on its own citizens to ensure that they don't show any solidarity or solidarity with their compatriots in the North.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, doesn't the ruling families there in South Korea, they had a history of collaboration with Japan during World War II, did they not?
You could argue that what you had in the division between the South and the North is really a division between those who collaborated with the Japanese and those who rejected the Japanese and fought against them. I mean, North Korea was founded by guerrilla leaders and by Kim Il-sung in particular, who was a prominent guerrilla leader who led Koreans in the fight to drive the Japanese out of Manchuria and Korea. Whereas those who came to power under the U.S. tutelage in the South were those who had collaborated with the Japanese.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the father of the woman who is now president, I was looking at his history. I was shocked. He had actually been trained by the Japanese and had served in China.
Yeah, he's in the Japanese Imperial Army. He was also a dignitary.
Well, what better credentials? Oh, my goodness.
Yes, I know there are people in senior positions within the South Korean military who had served in the Japanese Imperial Army, one of whom led a special unit that was devoted to hunting down the guerrilla leader named Kim Il-sung, and who received a medal from the Japanese emperor for his activities.
Yeah. More of that needs to be told. I think, actually, you're the best journalist I know since I have Stone to kind of talk about this in a fresh way, reminding us of these things. Of course, my favorite thing to always be reminded of, and I have to ask you to do this one more time, but because it's a matter of fact, that if there is a war footing, I don't know how to phrase this, the commander of the South Korean troops is an American general.
Yeah, under conditions of war, under times of war, the South Korean forces come under the command of the United States. And there's a plan for the South Koreans to eventually be responsible for the conduct of their own wars, but they keep deferring that, postponing it.
Well, I do recall that part of colonialism, because when the African countries began to fight for independence, I remember Adlai Stevens in the United States saying, "Oh, we think they should be independent when they're ready." So apparently they have the same policy on Korea. we're speaking to Stephen Gowans. I guess just lastly, and it's gowans.wordpress.com. Last thing, Stephen, Obama's leaving office. It is true, isn't it, that under his government, under his leadership, the president has had developed more nuclear weapons than any other president in history?
He talks about his dream of a world without nuclear weapons, but I think that's a world in which every country but the United States is without nuclear weapons.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't seem to show much interest in abandoning the U.S. Nuclear arsenal or have any interest in any He's not making much headway in reducing the number of nuclear arms in the world.
Well, he'll probably get a second prize somewhere down the line. Stephen Gowans, thank you very, very much. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. And you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM. And I want to thank Charlotte. And we will see you next week.